Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the October 15, 2017 session, focusing on Matthew chapter 22, verses 1 through 14. Let go and let God. I'm David Cassidy.
I'm Nikki Hardiman.
I'm Bert Montgomery.
And I'm Daniel Glaze.
Okay, so I am in Kentucky, and for us, autumn has kind of showed up today. So we've had cooler weather, and I also drove by a nursery that's just up the street coming back from work today and noticed they were starting to get ready to put all the pumpkins out. So I'm curious. I know for me what my favorite autumn food is that I look forward to having, but I'm wondering if you have one.
I do. Every year we make chocolate chip pumpkin muffins, and that's my favorite thing to make in the fall.
That sounds good.
I don't know. It's more of a genre, I guess. But you know, this is the time where any kind of chili is good chili, if you ask me. But no, I mean, and there are regional varieties. People do it different ways. In fact, in Kentucky and Ohio, there's this whole noodle thing in the chili. It's all
and
good.
Cinnamon.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's getting to be chili, C-H-I-L-I weather.
Yes.
No, I'm easy. I just head over to Dave's Dark Horse Tavern, so
see whatever's on the menu. Yeah, well, see, I'm a pumpkin pie kind of guy. Mm. Pretty much anything pumpkin, I'm ready for. So, but pumpkin pie in particular. Well, I hope you each get to sample some of your favorite foods soon as we enjoy this season that's coming upon us. We are still in Matthew, and we have a parable for our text tonight. And I don't know, for the rest of you, this one for me is one I have a little trouble wrapping my head around. So, Daniel, I'm hoping you can kind of clear it up for me as we get started.
Absolutely. You've come to the right place. It's parables are funny things. Sometimes they cut right to the heart of the matter in ways that prose or even preaching cannot. Stories are like this, you know, they have this way of inviting you in, looking all warm and fuzzy, and it's not until the punchline hits that you realize you've been caught. And if y'all remember who said it, please remind me, but I remember someone saying, you know that you've gotten close to understanding a parable when you say to yourself, I'm not quite sure what that means, but I don't think I like it.
Right, yep.
Today's parable is like that, I think. It's a little over the top, to be sure, but it has a lot to teach us. Here's the story. A king's son is to be married. Naturally, the king wants to throw a wedding banquet for the bride and groom, so he sends his servants out with invitations to all the landowners and rich people in town. But if I know people, the king doesn't really like all those folks he's inviting, but he feels he has to invite them. You know how it is. Dear, do we really have to invite the Rosenbergs? They are so rude and they're loud. I know, honey, but remember they invited us to their kids' bar mitzvah. We really need to invite them. That kind of thing. But the people who received the invitations, man, they come up with all sorts of excuses. Dear King, our little grandson is playing soccer this weekend, so we can't come to the wedding party. Oh, dear King, we'd love to come to this party, but we've got a place down at the river and we haven't been in months. This infuriates the king. Just forget them, he says. I tell you what, he says to his servants, go out into the streets, into the marketplace, into the fields, invite the folks who've never been to the royal palace. So with all these invitations in hand, the king's servants approach the poor, the crippled, the blind, the lame, and all over the city it's the same thing. Some guy is sitting on a sidewalk with a cardboard sign saying, homeless, we'll work for food. God bless you. The servant walks up and hands him a card. There's a woman begging for spare change on the sidewalk outside the royal gate. She too is handed a card. And on each of these cards is written in beautiful calligraphy. The king requests your presence at the royal palace for a wedding banquet honoring His Royal Highness, the Crown Prince. And wouldn't you know it, when the night comes for this royal party, the wedding hall was packed. Packed with people who hadn't been invited to a party in their lives. the chefs are putting the finishing touches on the meal. The band is tuning up, and the king makes his grand entrance. And as he enters the room, he notices that there's one guest, a man in the corner, who's not wearing a wedding robe. The king says, "Young man, why aren't you dressed? Where's your wedding robe?" The fellow doesn't know what to say. The king says to his servants, "Tie this man up. Throw him into the outer darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." What in the world? In the story where the king is so generous with invitations, why is he so cruel to this one guest who isn't wearing the official uniform, a wedding robe? See, friends, this is why, if you read the Bible literally, you will miss the point entirely. Jesus is not talking about clothes. Mm-hmm. The wedding robe stands for a way of life, one that honors the king, recognizes the privilege of receiving an invitation. But if you're like me, you can identify with that underdressed man more times than you'd care to admit. We march right up to the banquet buffet table with a striped shirt and plaid pants. God has given us such beautiful clothes of grace and love, but we refuse to wear them, to have them show, to make a difference. And I don't know about you, but I get really sad when Christians receive an invitation and even come to the party but don't wear their party clothes. Mm. Christians who can't find a way to say a kind word about anyone. People of faith who have every blessing in life, but they hold tight to their wallets. Christians who've been forgiven over and over and over again, and then turn right around and deny that forgiveness to somebody else. We wear our tattered old clothes to God's wedding party. See, the clothes we ought to wear are made of the finest cloth, using the most beautiful patterns God has designed. Patterns of justice, forgiveness, kindness, love, grace, mercy, and peace. So y'all come. Come to the party, because it's God's party, and God has invited you. Y'all come. Come just as you are, but don't stay as you are. Take off those old clothes and the filthy rags the world has made you wear. Put on your brilliant wedding robe. Put on those new clothes of life. Put on the beautiful clothes God has stitched just for you. Mm. And that's a little background on our text for today.
Daniel, when you were telling your story, I couldn't help but think of the epistle of the Colossians. And Colossians chapter 3 actually talks about clothing, and it does so exactly as you said. Colossians 3:12-14, "As God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, clothe yourselves with compassion and kindness and humility, meekness and patience, and forgive just as the Lord has forgiven you. Above all, clothe yourselves with love, which binds everything together in perfect harmony." And I think that's a perfect tie-in to the robe that you were speaking of, and how very often we're not wearing those. Those aren't the clothes we're wearing.
Mm. Hmm. Yeah, Bert, that's a great parallel to this, of the clothes we ought to wear. And I mean, it's a difficult lesson, but it shows me that it's not enough just to accept Christ's invitation. We have to, you know, as the other passages in the Bible talk about it, put on Christ. There are those clothes we have to wear. God's not just looking for warm bodies to come to the banquet, looking for folks who will show up and celebrate. So I think you're onto something by laying out those clothes that we are called to wear. It's not just anything we're allowed to put on.
Daniel, I always found myself wondering, and Bert may have helped provide some instruction or direction, but I found myself wondering, how do we know when we have the new robes on? How can we tell that it's the robes that God has provided, not the robes we've become comfortable in, or the clothes, tattered clothes that we have become comfortable in and feel like what we're supposed to be wearing.
There was a show that Regina and I used to like to watch. And it was, you know, it's one of those shows you almost feel guilty enjoying, but it's called What Not to Wear.
Oh, I love that show. That's such a fantastic show.
And so, you know, they would pick a subject who needed some help with, you know, with dressing themselves.
Right.
And the show ended up being more, you know, you thought it's going to be like a fashion show, and it was. But it also was more about helping somebody accept who they are and realize that even though they may be shaped differently than someone else, that they're still beautiful.
Right.
And that their clothing can accentuate that. Mm-hmm. But I was thinking about this while you guys were talking, because conversely, right? I mean, I think Daniel, you did a great job of outlining the, you know, the kinds of clothing God does want us to wear. But there, you know, there's kinds of clothing we shouldn't wear, right? There's a what not to wear list. Probably all of us as Christians know that we have sometimes donned, you know, the cloak of judgment or. Sure. Of you know, the cap of unforgiveness. I don't know, I'm pushing this too far, but you know where I'm going.
Keep on pushing. We were just going to wait. see how far you were going to go with that.
The socks of injustice.
I think we need to open up the canon. David has a new word. Not to carry it too far, but in that show, I did like that show. That was good. And I learned tips. I learned a lot of tips from watching that show. But oftentimes also people became stuck in a rut with their clothing because it's what they were familiar with and it's how they projected themselves to the world. And the idea of changing that felt uncomfortable and felt hard to do.
But we are used to projecting ourselves to the world, right? And clothing is one way that we do that. There are other ways. But the idea that as Christians that we should have a visible way of being with people, that they could see us and know, well, that person must be a Christian because of how they treat others.
Mm-hmm. Which is interesting because there's an entire subcultural industry of marketing Christianity with Christian clothes and Christian bumper stickers and Christian earrings and all that stuff.
And that's not what we're talking about.
Exactly. And, you know, Derek Webb, the singer-songwriter Derek Webb, made a joke about it, sang a song called They'll Know We Are Christians by the T-shirts That We Wear. And and then the whole thing is it has nothing to do with it. You know, they'll know we're Christians by our love.
Yes.
It has nothing to do with the T-shirts we're wearing, you know.
How many people are singing the hymn now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go.
It's going through my head.
The idea, and this gets into what Nikki talked about in her introductory video for the lesson. There's an element of us that wants to convey to everyone, we know we're in. And maybe the parable is the idea, you know, all the important people who think they're in don't show up. And they're not in. And it's all the people that the in people know would never be in that get invited and are in. This whole in and out thing and who's in, who's not in. You know, and one of the – we mentioned off before we started recording, you know, about some of the traditional interpretations of this. One of the things has been, well, this means that Jesus is taking God's kingdom away from the Jews and giving it to the Gentiles, which I'm not sure that's exactly what Jesus was meaning here. And I think Daniel is right on target with a better meaning and understanding of this parable than that. But he is talking, if he's talking to some of the religious leaders who know they're in, and some of the religious outsiders who are also Jewish, who have been told they're not worth anything, you know, that sense of reversal. Which is the sense of reversal is a common theme with Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, I don't want to push the metaphor too far, but I think if we stick with sort of the interpretation I laid out, which I'm of course fond of, that the because you know, but the clothes are sort of an outward appearance, and it's not to be showy, of course, but that what but that the new life we experience on the inside should make some difference on the outside. Mm. And it's interesting that that follows, I think, the king's action to be different as well. He takes the, you know, he rescinds those other invitations. Says, you don't want to come? Fine.
Don't
guess
come.
What? I take away the invitation. And he says, I'm going to invite the people who don't get invited. And so this change, or this new life that we're supposed to show and walk and wear, follows right behind the king doing the same. And so I think it's a really neat lesson for us. And it reminds me of, I'm not going to get all the details right because I was looking for my notes on it, and I couldn't find it. But there's a Philip Yancey in What's So Amazing About Grace. Is that the book?
Yeah.
He tells this story about he read it in the Boston Globe years ago. A very similar story, but this bride-to-be and her fiancé go to a swanky hotel in Boston to arrange for their wedding banquet. They make all the decisions, and they have really expensive tastes, and they just pull it all out, all the stops. And they, the bill comes to like, and this has been years ago, but the bill came to like $20,000 just for the meal. So they write a check for, you know, half that amount. Excuse me, as a deposit, and then they, you know, start planning for the big day. The day the wedding announcements are supposed to hit the mailbox, the groom sort of gets his cold feet. You know, I'm not sure. Can we take a little time to think about it? You know, that kind of thing. And the shock of it all just sends the bride into a tailspin. Once she recovers from that, she returns to that swanky hotel to cancel the banquet. And the events person says, you know, I'm really sorry. The same thing happened to me about the broken engagement. She says, but about that refund, you know, the contract is binding. You can't get it back. You're only entitled like 10% back or something like that. And she said, you can forfeit the rest of the money or go ahead with the banquet. So the bride decides that, I think it was the Grand Hyatt Hotel or something. She said, let's go ahead with it. So she changed, first thing she did was she changed the menu in honor of the spineless groom. She changed the menu to boneless chicken, which I love. And then she sends all these invitations to all Boston's homeless shelters.
Oh,
And these folks come off the street and dine on the finest meal. Their waiters in tuxedos are serving them. They eat the wedding cake. They dance to the melodies throughout the night. And it's a beautiful story that really, really closely parallels this one. That, you know, that and I have to believe that maybe these, I don't want to be judgmental, but maybe these homeless people showed up in dirty and tattered clothes. But because they came to celebrate, they were wearing the wedding robe, you know?
Yeah. Well, we all have this invitation to the banquet. May we not waste it or take it for granted, and may we put on our finest. Thank you for this conversation.
Thank y'all.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.